completely done yet. I don't know how to get the new
now too.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Great. All right. Very good. Well, welcome everybody. I hope everybody's doing well, and you had a good 4th of July. Nobody lost any fingers, I assume, which is good. Yeah, you don't want to end up in the ER these days. So, all right, we will start with a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make a motion. Carl seconded it, I guess.
All right, discussion on the minutes. Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, very good. We will, actually, we have Eve with us tonight, and she wants to give us an update on the Columbia Partnership for the Communities program.
All right. Well, I hope you want an update on the project as well.
Well, absolutely. That's why you're with us. Very good.
So just as a little bit of history, our county has an existing opioid task force that predates the HEAL grant. It includes a lot of people from different healthcare agencies, community-based organizations, government, et cetera. And so for the past few years, a lot of different organizations across the county have been doing various different responses to the opioid epidemic, including Narcan trainings, access to medical treatment, support for individuals with opioid use disorder. Each of the groups mostly operate independently with some overlap. And I think the idea of the commission it's being headed by Vin Martello is to allow for more coordination between these groups. And overlap and sharing of ideas. So this existed before Columbia came into the picture. So Columbia University got a grant to test the impact of their intervention on several outcomes related to opioid use disorder. And so this is a very big national project. There includes other states. So in addition to New York, Kentucky, Massachusetts, and Ohio are part of the HEAL consortium funded by the National Institutes of Health. And in New York, there are 16 communities that were selected to be a part of the New York HEAL, which is headed by Columbia. And then last October, we were informed that Ulster County was entered into wave one. They basically staggered their intervention into wave one, wave two, and so Ulster was put into wave one. And stop me anytime you have any questions. So the idea of the HEAL grant is that through community vision, shared goals, and targeted strategies that use evidence-based practices and data, they're hoping that they could reduce deaths by 40%. That was their goal, really opioid use disorder related deaths. But they also wanted to increase those trained in naloxone or Narcan, which is the medication that you give to somebody who's current. If someone has an overdose, the Narcan holds them over until an ambulance can come. And so they want to increase the number of people who are trained in Narcan. And if you get a training, you actually get a little kit that you can keep with you in case you need it. Also, increase the number of people who have opioid use disorder who are on buprenorphine, which is a medical treatment, also called Suboxone, and reduce overprescribing of prescription pain medications. So those were the outcomes that HEAL is intended for. But I'll just clarify, those are all outcomes that were relevant to the county before HEAL as well. So there's four work groups that are part of HEAL right now. So the first one is to increase naloxone or Narcan training. So before there was the HEAL grant, there were several organizations who were already conducting these trainings. So the sheriff conducts the trainings. Family of Woodstock, Department of Health. So since HEAL started, their efforts are to increase this training by adding more organizations. So from the last report, in Ulster County, about 140 people were trained. I don't really know how much before HEAL, but I know it was happening a lot. I mean, Family of Woodstock did a lot of Narcan training. The sheriffs, if anyone went to the Ulster County Fair last year, the sheriff's van, they did a lot of Narcan training. So there were several happening, but I don't know how the numbers exactly compare. The second work group is intended to increase access to medical treatment. This is still in the, for HEAL, this is still in the planning stages. There are a few challenges to increasing medical treatment for people who have opioid use disorder. Doctors need to have X waiver to prescribe, and not a lot of doctors necessarily do. So they haven't really gotten off the ground in really increasing the access, but at the same time, Ellenville Hospital has its own grant and has been increasing prescribing at Ellenville Hospital. The sheriff also has his own efforts to increase MAT in the jail. We have a resolution in front of us that provides funding to related to MAT in the jail. So both of those are unrelated to HEAL. The third work group is to reduce overprescribing. So this is still also in the planning stage. A lot of it's related to planning patient and provider awareness campaigns. So anecdotally, what I've heard, and this was before HEAL, is there are, in Ulster County, there's only a couple of doctors who overprescribe. It's not ubiquitous. There's just a couple of doctors who just don't seem to get it. And from what used to be true, and Mark can correct me, is that the state is not forthcoming in the names of these doctors. Like they collect the information of prescribing on a state level, but they weren't necessarily telling us who they are. Is that still true? Yeah. However, the sheriff did make an arrest several months ago. I think a birdie informed him, and they sort of, I don't know what their technique was, but they basically, there was a provider that was arrested for excessive prescribing, but those were not related to HEAL at all. Those were on their own. So they're still in that working group, like the planning stage. And then the fourth work group is the media campaign, and the media campaign is focusing on mostly on encouraging medical assisted treatment, trying to normalize that. But they are also have in their campaign is informing people of the Narcan trainings when there are trainings set up, and they might use it to reduce overprescribing. I don't know. And then the last element, which isn't part of a work group, is data collection. And the data collection includes things like EMS calls, hospitalizations, and deaths related to OUD. It's not really complex, and it's not actually anything we weren't really collecting beforehand. It just wasn't a part of the grant, but different groups were collecting it. So, yeah, I'll pause for you, Laura. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Well, going back to the Columbia study, it's my understanding that it's strictly for the data collection. So are you giving us history on
the programs
to lead into what they're studying, or?
The Columbia study is, in essence, if I was to simplify it, is their research question is, if we come into a county and we help organize them and coordinate them and kind of guide them through a process, will they reduce their OUD deaths? And so their intervention primarily is them coming and working with us. But a part of that is to have these work groups. So the part of their intervention is, can I help you as a county have more Narcan trainings? Can I help you as a county to increase access to medical treatment? Can I help you as a county to reduce overprescribing? So the data collection is not the whole thing. Data collection is an element of HEAL, but a large amount of the money, which goes to Juanita, is like coordinating and organizing, making sure these work groups meet, minutes are held. Sometimes it's a meeting of everybody, sometimes it's a meeting of the work groups. And a lot goes to the media campaign. That's a good chunk of the money as well. So the money covers the staffing, the data person, the sort of program manager, and what's the title of the other position, Mark? Not the data person and not Juanita.
It's like a community facilitator, like community and outreach.
Okay.
It's like a long, like, six word, but it's basically community facilitation and outreach.
That person works with one. So Juanita is supposed to have the bigger picture of it, and that position kind of works because it works within it. They both show up at the different work groups. I guess what I would say is just the last point is, you know, in my personal opinion, HEAL is in itself is not a game changer. There were efforts in place in our county by many organizations that were doing quite a lot. The benefit of HEAL is allowing some kind of coordination and organization where, you know, instead of a bunch of people operating separately, it allows it to be a little bit more coordinated. Let me just say one more point. There are other things that are still happening that are completely separate from HEAL. Like, for example, Ellenville Hospital has gotten several grants. So in addition to increasing MAT in the hospital, they have started a fatality review team and a crisis intervention team. And if you come to the law enforcement meeting, Brandon is going to talk and explain about those two groups, which one is to really assess what happens if someone dies of an overdose, and the other one is if anyone is identified as being addicted to opioids, there's a whole follow-up, like a bunch of people who know what they're doing and help them to get treatment and check in on them and find out why they missed appointments. And so that's an Ellenville program. It's for the whole county, but Ellenville got that grant. The money is nice from HEAL, but it's not, it's the stuff we already are doing. In my personal, it's sort of like we're exchanging, getting that money for giving them some credit for if the numbers go down. But I think it's important to know that the county was doing a lot of this work already.
Yes. Is this a one-time grant or
It's a three-year grant.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is year one, obviously?
No, we're sort of entering into two. Year one was a lot of planning and preparation.
Well, the end of year one. Yeah, entering. Yeah.
Okay. Peter?
So is this then, this information that they're gathering, is this going to be used as a model to go apply to other counties, to give it to other states? Like, what's the end goal for this program?
Yeah, I mean, so NIH paid for this for the whole country. They identified four states that had high levels of opioid use disorder. And I guess the idea is to, should it be successful? Although, you know, there's a lot of noise to measuring success because we don't know a counterfactual, like we don't know what our rates would be without HEAL. We'll just, you know, but I guess the idea is that they could then, for generalizability, say if you have coordinated efforts and you apply these evidence-based practices, you too could reduce your opioid.
So I just want to be really blunt. Are you telling us this information because you think we should use this money somewhere else?
Oh, we can't.
There is no money.
Okay, thank. No. Just wondering if there was some other reason why you were giving us
all. No, it's important to know all of the efforts that are happening for opioid use disorder in the county, knowing how HEAL contributes to all of that, but also knowing that there are a lot of efforts that are not related to HEAL that are also happening in the county.
Right. I just thought maybe there was some other reason.
No, we want the money. It's good they're giving it to us. It's a lot. Al?
Eve, do you remember when we were up at NYSAC up in Albany? I know Tracy and I went to the seminar about opioid addiction, which was given by a woman by the name, I believe her name was Cheryl Moore. I don't know if you were there as well, Pete or Abe. Did you go to that one as well?
No.
They're from Erie County. She was from Erie County, and they did an incredible drop in their opioid addiction. And I found it interesting some of the things that you were saying. The first and foremost part they found to be most effective was the data collection. and they coordinated across all agencies throughout the county, every town police department, every ambulance squad, every ER. And they had a base of all the, they asked the same questions, filled in the same data. And that's where they started. They were able to reduce their overdose and death by, I don't want to lie and give you the wrong number, but it was significant.
Right.
The woman's name, and actually while we were up there, we asked if she does other presentations, and it behooves us if we can somehow find a way to get her down here to Ulster County to take a look and listen to her. She really has some great information. Right.
Well, you would. I'd also encourage you to bring in Victoria from Ellenville Hospital. I mean, a lot of this thing is that the data is when the data is all in separate places, it's hard to know if somebody gets seen in an ER, did they have medical treatment? If they did, are they ever hospitalized later? Do they ever die? And so there is an effort to create some singular database that allows for all of this information to be linked, so that you would be able to follow an individual through their whole experience. That's happening both related to HEAL and Department of Health as well as Ellenville Hospital. They're kind of both working on it at the same time. So somebody will have
to. I think it's great, but I think the data, before you can treat the problem, you have to know what the problem is and where the problem is located. And Ellenville is doing, what they're doing is great. I think it's fantastic, but I think it should be a coordinated effort. Not only with Ellenville, but with Kingston.
Oh, yeah. No, Ellenville is the whole county.
The county, all the medical practices.
Ellenville's not just Ellenville Hospital. The right. MAT is just Ellenville Hospital, but it's the whole county. And, in fact, Ellenville partners with Columbia and Green. I will say that originally it was hard to get Kingston Hospitals on board with the Ellenville projects. Kingston Hospital is now coming on board more, but when they originally applied for these grants, they wanted Kingston Hospital to also be a part of these emergency room. So basically in Ellenville, someone shows up in the ER with an OUD and they get connected with MAT treatment. They connect to treatment after they're out of the ER. It's an excellent program. Ellenville's also connected with the sheriff. They're really working. So
that's
the grant, but it's including the whole county.
I think if there's a way, Mark, if I can ask you a question, I see you raising your hand real quick too.
Yeah, can I just add one piece to that, and then can I just jump in and add one part to that? Sure. Is that they are, like Ellenville Regional Hospital, as Eve said, this task force was established before HEAL, and so it's kind of what we used to implement the HEAL study, but it's always been there, and Ellenville Regional Hospital has always been like one of the core partners of that task force as well. So,
Is there a way, and again, I my naivete or whatever you want to call it, that we could bring, I tell you, it was an incredible presentation that she put on up in NYSAC. And I wish Tracy was on board here too, because she would agree, I'm sure. If we can bring her to the county and maybe to one of our meetings, Craig, and do a presentation.
So can I just add, so one of the challenges that I originally experienced when Columbia came was it felt, and I'm not saying they really were this way, and over time it elaborate, but that it wasn't acknowledged that there are people doing some really good work in our county. So while I like the idea, you know, I think that inviting someone else, but before you do, I would strongly encourage you to bring the people in our county who are doing this, because, you know, there are, like, absolutely. I think that, again, at law enforcement, you'll hear from Brandon, which is the fatality review team and the crisis response team, but we have some outstanding people doing some amazing stuff here. Family of Woodstock has been doing Narcan training. What the sheriff is doing is pretty remarkable. And so
I understand that, Eve. I get that. Yeah. And I agree. What I'm saying is that they had the same issue. Let me try to rephrase this in a way, and I mean this in the most respectful way to everybody involved. Every county has an addiction problem. There's not a county in the state that doesn't have this issue. Ulster has a pretty big one, in my opinion. Erie County up in Buffalo was rated as one of the biggest in the state. So they found a way that worked, and it really worked. Now, I'm not saying that we don't have people that can do that, but I think we can learn from what they've done, not necessarily make them do it, but we have great people, but there's information that they already have that can help us and help the people in Ellenville, help our sheriff's department coordinate it all so we can maybe get similar or better results than they did. That's all. I'm just trying to enlist the help of other counties that have already been through this ahead of us. That's all.
Right. You know, and I agree with that. I think a good approach is to get everybody on board. You know, if we could reach out to the lady that had given, you know, that talk up at NYSEC, I think is a good thing. If we can reach out to Ellenville Hospital and we can get Victoria, we can even get, you know, Steve Kelly, who's been instrumental with the whole opioid issues. He gives talks all around the country. You know, he can come in and,
It's not taken away from anybody else. It's just adding to our...
And share with us his ideas. Yeah, and I think if we all get on board, you know, we can reach out to everybody. Ultimately, I think we all have the same goal. And if we can coordinate that, I think it's a good thing. Yeah, I wouldn't exclude anybody. But yeah, no, definitely with the best intentions for our county, you know, first and foremost. And if that includes, you know, reaching out to somebody in Erie, that could possibly, you know, bring something to the table that could help, then it's something we shouldn't rule out.
To clarify, I was just thinking that the step one would be to really know what's happening here, then step two might be, because we don't know how much maybe Steve Kelly is working with Erie for all we know. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, let's start with what we know here, the task force and those people, and then figure out where the next step should be.
And that's where data collection is the foremost thing. You have to know what you're working with before you fix it. And that's the biggest thing.
Dave's got his hand up, Craig. I don't know if you see him.
I don't. Yeah, sure.
That's okay. So first of all, I just want to thank Legislator Walter for presenting this. And I know this is something that our committee asked her to do, and I very much appreciate it. And I also, I don't know who exactly this question is directed at, but I'm curious why the Opioid Task Force reports to the Law Enforcement Committee and not to the Public Health Committee.
They don't. So just to clarify, the presentation that's being done is they will absolutely come to you. The presentation that I invited Brandon to is because I happen to be on the task force on that group also, and I know that in order for them to do their crisis review team, they need buy-in from police and sheriff and the DA and probation, and to make their lives easier rather than them, I just said they're all in the same place at this meeting. So if you want to come and talk about what you're doing, plus a lot of people in law enforcement in that committee are very interested in this as well. You know, the drugs cross crime and health, right? As does violence. And so Brandon would be more than thrilled to also present to you guys, but you guys have, that HEAL is under you and all that stuff is under you.
Okay, just to follow up on that, and I appreciate the approach of getting what needs to get done, getting that done, especially when the people that need to do it are in the room. But I'll just point out that one of the many areas that I think we need to revisit the role that we can play in the health of our community is when we make decisions. And I realize that is not what's happening here, but you know, and that this isn't a decision to go the law enforcement route rather than the public health route. But I think we really do have an opportunity to create a brighter future by approaching these as public health problems and solving them on a, you know, individual focused basis rather than as criminal problems. And I realize that that's not why they're presenting to the law enforcement task force, but I would love to see our committee continue as we have here, asking you to present this information to us and then going forward to take a larger role in some of these public health crises that unfortunately manifest in our society as law enforcement problems, when the reality is police are not the ones that ought to be taking care of our really troublesome relationship with opioids.
Let me just also clarify, EMS is under that committee too. So it's not just law enforcement. There are several different people who would touch a life of someone who's having an overdose in both sides. But I hear you. I mean, although I did write a book called Epidemiological Criminology because of a lot of these things do intersect, and you're welcome to read it. But
it absolutely,
I get an autograph copy?
Yeah, who's the publisher?
Taylor and Francis, and it costs too much money. If you buy it, I'll sign it. I think it is recognized even among the law enforcement that this is a public health problem. They just happen to sometimes be the first line. They're the first person.
And quite frankly, I feel bad that we've asked so much of the police to do things like that. And I think that some of the other grants that we're looking at tonight might be the ones that would prevent that from happening, as is the case on many nights in the public health committee.
A lot of these issues were addressed a couple of years ago. I don't know for the new people that are here in the Ulster County Coalition on Narcotics, that was a committee that was put together, and it comprised of law enforcement, health officials, various people from around the county. And they came up with a comprehensive plan, I think over the course of 6 months, that they implemented and or continue to implement based on the input that they got, over that course of many months of holding this committee. So, if we can continue on that, also with what we get out of this Columbia project and maybe reaching out to some other people, I think would be the right direction to go. And I really thank you, Eve, for updating us and keeping us in the loop of how that grant.
Yeah, one thing, because I know Mark has his hands up. I've been very much closely working with the nonprofits and health organizations in Ulster County for over two decades, and we are a very big county. Our strength is that we have a lot of incredible organizations doing amazing things. Our weakness is we are so big that sometimes they operate in their own vacuums and they're not coordinated together. And so any efforts that can happen out of the legislature to sort of pull their strengths together for many issues, because again, we have no lack of incredible services and programs. It's just they sometimes overlap. Your example of UCAN is an example of pulling them all together, but more ways of getting them to talk to each other is great. Sorry, Mark.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up that I'm happy to have Juanita and the HEALS team come and present at a month upcoming on other pieces that maybe weren't touched upon here. And then I just wanted to bring up that as far as the work that has been done, and this is pretty much work that had been done pre-Columbia, but we went from 56 overdose fatalities in 2018 all the way down to 33. Now, much of that in 2019, much of that work, unfortunately, post-pandemic has been erased because we're just it's really, people are starting to write about it now on the national level. But this is an epidemic that's kind of underlying the pandemic is, opioid overdoses are just shooting back up. People are feeling like there's no support. They're feeling isolated and we're seeing problems again.
And then getting access to medical treatment is harder during a pandemic. So the two together are pretty bad combination.
Actually, the timing is very good, though. I'm involved in a couple of studies of how COVID impacts, just various different programs. So this was convenient, and I was going to ask Mark, how much has it gone back up to our 2018 numbers?
It's hard to tell. It's definitely high. We're at least pre, 2019, early 2019 wasn't as good as late 2019. And so we were hoping to carry kind of the the last half or last quarter of 2019 into 2020. And I think it was that that momentum was riding. And then again, February, March hit and it's gone well back up. Now, if there's any bright note, it's that we are, Narcan's being used a lot more and it's saving people's lives. So, you know, there's many, many more overdoses that aren't fatal right now, which is a good thing, but we're in a surge. Anytime I get, you know, notifications from the state when we're in a surge, which is, I think, 5 overdoses over a 72-hour period or something like that. Now, many of them are non-fatal overdoses, but I'm getting those emails, you know, unfortunately more frequently than I would like. So get your Narcan training. We can also have someone come to this committee meeting when we're off the Zoom world and bring Narcan, and it's about a 10-minute training, and we can get you all trained.
I did the training at the African American Festival.
Great.
Yeah. And Saugerties Police Department has been doing it on a
regular. Yeah, Saugerties has been doing it, and they still do it.
And I got to give my hats off to Chief Sinagra and them for the progress that they're making with it. Probably 30%, 40% of the cars driving down the street in Saugerties have a Narcan kit in their car.
Sure. Yeah, I always carry one. You know, at crazy stories, too. A couple of years ago, I was out campaigning, and I had knocked on a door, and they were talking to me about their son and his girlfriend's addiction, and they weren't sure if they were using opioids or what they were using, and they were afraid, you know, that they were going to come home one day, and one of them were going to be on the floor, you know, unresponsive, and they wouldn't know what to do. And I happened to have two kits on me because I carried them after I did two Narcan trainings. I did one in Walker Valley and one in Ellenville. And since then, I had always carried two. And I gave them a kit. And about 3 days later, there was a call from the Walker Valley Fire Department that they went to that house and somebody was unresponsive. And one of their parents had used the kit that I gave them in order to, I guess, reverse the effects of whatever they had OD'd on. And it, I actually felt it felt pretty good. You know, I unfortunately, you know, something like that is a possibility now, but just having the training or having the kits available and readily available for people, you know, saves many lives, you know. And there was I used to get a lot of pushback from that too, because now, there's people who don't believe in giving second chances, but you know what? Narcan is there for the, not just the person who had OD'd, but it's for the unsuspecting or the surprised, you know, parent, friend, or loved one that walks into a situation where their kid is lying on the floor in, you know, their kitchen, unresponsive. And, you know, and since then, I always have two kits on me. And
it's no different than this. I carry this for a bee sting allergy. It's an EpiPen, and addiction is a disease, and it's really no different, right?
Yep.
I'd be up for a refresher course, Mark, if it's okay with the chair to bring somebody. I had training maybe 2 or 3 years ago, so I'm sure my Narcan kit is expired, but I still carry it with me.
It really doesn't expire. Like, I know that they can, they're effective even like 2 or 3 years later. Of course, everything has an expiration date. I think that's more of a marketing ploy sometimes, but you know, I don't encourage people to use expired medication, but when in a situation, yeah, that's potentially life or death, I think I would go with it rather than not.
I tell you what, you know, one of the things that occurred to me based on, again, that seminar I went to up in NYSAC, I thought I learned quite a bit. Everywhere in the county, and I don't know how to bring this motion forward in the form of a resolution, but I hope to do this in the future, would be everywhere that there is an AED, there should be a Narcan box. They have wall-mounted Narcan boxes. It should be in every county building. It should be in every office building. It should be mandatory in every commercial building that there's a Narcan kit right alongside of that AED that we have. I mean, it's that kind of an emergency, and I think it behooves us not to do that.
Can I add something that behooves you to do, or us to do?
Sorry.
Thanks, Doc. There's, and Mark, maybe you know the latest with it, but, you know, an effort to have all pharmacies provide a disposal box. You can't throw pain medications. You can't dump them. You can't put them in your garbage. You can't dump them down your toilet. And a large percentage of addiction starts with access to prescription pain medicine that someone got out of maybe their own or from someone else's medicine cabinet. So these should be readily available for people to dispose their unused pain meds. And there was trying to be legislation on a state level to get the the drugstores like Rite Aid, the big chains, to make sure they have it. Like our small Dietrich's has it. And I think Nico's or wherever in Kingston, do they still exist? I think we have two pharmacies that have it, but to make sure that these drop boxes, these safe drop boxes are located everywhere. Yeah, in the police department, but sometimes you can get in, sometimes you can't. They just need to be, pharmacies are the best places and drugstores because that's where people are going, but they should be everywhere because you'd be surprised how many people have these leftover pills in their houses.
You're absolutely right. And you know, it's sad, but I think I know this sounds kind of like, what do you want to call it, morbid or whatever. Not only should we have drop boxes at every pharmacy, and that should be a state mandate. I really believe that. I think that goes beyond what the county would do. I also think that, and as morbid as this might sound, that every funeral director who does this, because a lot of times that's not something that's discussed with the family when they're planning that. I mean, a lot of these people, some of these elderly people have like hundreds of drugs in their medicine cabinets. And that's not something that's ever discussed with them. You know, they close up the house and they throw it away or whatever they do, flush it. And I think that's something that should be part of the discussion there as well. Because every person who passes away leaves behind them, especially if they're elderly, you know, sometimes dozens of different drugs, and a lot of them are opioids and addictive.
Yep.
And I think that's something that we can work forward to, look forward to and work towards as well.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot of neat things that we could all do collectively to make this better place. I think, Eve, that's an awesome idea. I actually was had that discussion with Tracy once before, but which I think is great. But I think there's all of these things that can all work. And I think we're in the right committee. I think we got enough people right here to make it work.
I know late 2018, the governor signed the law to require the chains to do that. I have not followed up to see if they're in every one.
No, there's something, you know, as of a few months ago, somehow there's something that they're fighting it, or there's some process, and Vin Martella could explain to you more, but whatever that effort was on the state level has been interceded by something, and again, I wish I could be a little bit more articulate about it, but yeah.
It's also an environmental issue, so I wonder if there's something in environmental legislation that talks about disposal of medications.
Very bad to dispose of them in garbage. All right. Thank you.
Very good.
Thanks, Eve.
Appreciate the update. All right. Very good. Well, then we will move into resolutions. We will start with resolution 245. And that's increased funding from the New York State Office of Addiction Services for a minimum wage and workforce cost of living adjustment. It's called adjustment. That's $8,200 from the state.
I move for discussion if we need to. We need to do that, Daddy?
We need a second. Yeah.
We just need a second.
I'll second.
So I got a question. This is a simple resolution where we're going to get money from the state because we're increasing it, right?
Right.
That's a no-brainer.
Yeah, you almost get these every month, I think.
Yeah, we had them last.
Just wanted to make sure that we had it right.
That's all. It's just a formality. It's pass-through money, so. Yeah, all right. Go ahead.
Can I say something just on this? I have no problem with this at all. But I do, you know, one of the things, like the overarching themes of public health, I feel in this country right now, is that we've been fulfilling more and more of these types of requirements on the public side through subcontracting to private entities. And if you look at the budget, there's a number of line items, and the county is one of them, but I think it's like 10% of the budget that's covered in this. And when you have such an important public health benefit that you're outsourcing to these other entities, and you realize that a minimum wage increase like materially changes the cost, it should give you a pause for a second to think about the way that we have taken public health out of the public space and put it in the private sector, where we're dealing with minimum wage increases, and that's a material impact on our budget, when in a different version of the reality that we live in, these would be union jobs where minimum wage isn't even a consideration. These might be jobs where you can actually make a family and own a home. And that's not the situation that we're in. We have this incentive to always find the lowest cost of doing such important work that really is in the public space. So I will, this is probably not the last time you'll hear me make that comment on minimum wage increases in a resolution like this where we're accepting the funds.
Abe, I agree with you.
If I could just add one point to that, and I am fully in agreement with you on that, Abe, but the only piece that I'll add is that a lot of this OASIS funding is merely pass-through funding that where the grantee, the subcontractor, is decided by the state, and it's coming in through our budget and going right back out. We don't even, it's not like we put this out to bid and look for the lowest bidder. It's just straight flows through our budget. And so we don't really, and I think to your point, maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the state would have provided this financing, and it may have been a county employee or at least a contractor that paid more, and then the state funding for mental health through OASIS and OMH has just gone down so drastically in that amount of time that this is what you see, where you're right, a COLA, a minimum wage increase, drastically affects this. And to where it's 8,500 here, 1 month, 1,500, you know, it's like every month these COLA increases happen.
It all adds up. And that goes back to that $15 minimum wage. That's a whole other issue.
It might be two divergent issues here.
Yeah, exactly. But you know where that was going, right?
I do.
All right, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Move to resolution 256, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000. This is for the purchase of medication assisted treatment. That's the mat that Eve was talking about earlier.
And this is this is in the jail for inmates specifically.
Correct. Yep. Move for discussion.
I'll move that.
Second.
Yeah. And this is a one-time payment, right? $50,000.
Yeah, it's a not to exceed $50,000. This is, I think, the First Amendment on this contract.
Right.
Or actually, this is a new contract, but we typically give $50,000 a year for these services.
Yeah. No issue on my end.
Yep. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Resolution 257. Approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000. This is to extend the term of clinical services in collaboration with Child Protection Services. Move for discussion.
I'll make a motion to move for discussion.
I'll second.
Second. This is 100% state, $70,000, right? This I think it's going to be a total of 140. This is that's over the course of what the past 4 years,
I believe. My question, Craig, is do we look at this from time to time, at least to find out? I mean, Allison Krauss, who is the licensed
social worker.
Sure. She's a social worker.
Social worker, yeah. I was trying to think of all the title, as long as it might be. Is this something maybe Mark even knows that goes out to like a bid, or are we just arbitrarily every year going to keep renewing this? I mean, this is we're done, you know, basically up to $140,000 at $70,000 a year. Is there somebody else that may be doing it for $50,000 a year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is another one of those where the state kind of chooses the grantee, so it may have been done through the state procurement at one time, and then this is typically the person who we use. Like said, Craig said, it's 100% state funded, so it's another one of those basic path through. And I believe that in the grant funding, that this is a grantee, like a subcontractor, already put in place.
So my question, Mark, is if let's say we were to say no, just hypothetically, what would happen?
It's actually a good question.
I
brought that up in the past before. Because what if you say no to the majority of everything that comes through this committee is state mandated?
Yeah,
anyway, So we
would probably, my guess is what would happen, and I hate to say this kind of thing because I don't like. Potentially the state could come back and look at other funding, right? And say, look, you know, you didn't approve this contract. We're going to look at funding otherwise. I don't think that would happen. I think that we could work with the state. I never like to say that, like, there's ultimatums where, like, if this doesn't pass, we're going to lose all sorts of funding. But the reality is, like, this is one of those things that's just kind of a pass-through. And I don't know that we have a lot of say in the selection of a vendor. I can follow up with Mike at DSS. I know this has to go before Ways and Means too, and just find out if there's ever a time that we've done, like, let's say an RFP, because that's what it would be for these kind of professional services.
It almost seems like this person, Allison Krauss, pretty much has a lock on business forever.
Right, you know, and some of the issue some of the time also has to do with the services that they provide. Is it limited to what the county needs and they're able to provide for? You know, I often got that question as to why we outsource to other counties or neighboring counties and we don't, you know, stick strictly to Ulster County and use Ulster County services. And, you know, it's often the case that, you know, Ulster County and the professionals can't provide those services for the county. So I don't know if that has any role in this. But yeah, she's been a go-to person for many, many years. I've seen this come through a number of times, you know, during my tenure in the legislature. And yeah, I don't know if it's who just the state,
It almost sounds like there's
prefers a, or
she's got a job for life as long as she wants it because everybody every year after year after year it just keeps getting yes because it's a mandate from the state. I'm not so sure I'm buying that. Sorry, Mark.
She's got good lobbyists.
Especially when we're going to be $35 to $40 million in a hole.
Right. I mean, the only piece I'll say is that if we turn down this contract, we just won't get the revenue associated with it, right?
Right. Wow. Yeah, no, of course. And it's
that sounds like extortion.
Well, I didn't say that.
I did.
Yeah. But yeah, no, and it is 100% state. So, yeah, they're paying the bill. So, all right. Anything else?
Ultimately, our constituents are paying the bill.
Well, no, of course. No.
Well, it's a case of abdicating one aspect of governing to the state.
Yep.
I don't mean to be a pain in the butt, but you understand where I'm coming from, right?
No, Al, we're going to have some great political theory conversations in the years ahead.
I hope so. You know, it's funny. I agree with you on a lot of things. It's almost scary.
I'm enjoying this conversation very much. I won't tell Ken.
No, please don't. I will.
All right. Any other? Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. All right. Resolution 258, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 with New York State ARC. This is for preschool special ed services.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Nope. Yeah, this is an aye.
Aye.
Can't argue those.
Very good. Okay. Opposed? Very good. All right, carried. And that's it with resolutions, right? 258 was the last one. Okay, is any old business, new business, anything the committee wants to bring forward?
So can I just ask, are you all interested in having me have someone like Juanita, the project manager from HEAL, come present next month? Or
sure.
I could have somebody else present too. You know, I could ask Mike to come in from social services and talk about some of these pass-through contracts and et cetera. But,
yeah, well, and specifically, sorry, Lori, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say whatever the committee wants.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea. Yeah, if you want to reach out to Mike, if you want to, even if from Eve's recommendation, you know, we could, I could reach out to Steve Kelly, you know, or Victoria, and see if they're interested and come talk about the opioid issues. And yeah, even if we wanted to reach out to, who is that, the lady out from Erie County?
Cheryl Moore, I think her name was. I got to look it up to make sure.
Yeah, I think that's something that we should consider. You know, if the committee's on board with that, then we should reach out to them, have them come in.
I mean, the more information we get, the better we can all do our job.
Sure.
I definitely like Eve's suggestion, though, of getting a really good understanding of what we're doing here so that we can then invite somebody from outside so that we're all really well informed about all, because I know I'm not. So it'd be great to hear, you know, really comprehensive view of the efforts here.
I think, based on what Eve was saying, I think the county in a lot of ways is fragmented when it comes to the opioid addiction. I think we need to become more centralized and have a more combined approach to the problem, not just town by town but the entire as a county. And I think the way to do that would bring somebody outside who's really not connected to anybody in our county, but can take, you know, from the outside looking in, can look at the picture as a whole. And maybe that's how we can move forward with it. That's just my opinion.
I do want to bring up that's kind of part of the point of the Columbia Healing Communities grant is exactly. We're going to get information coming out of this because this is why they did it in wave one and wave two is they identified a bunch of counties in the four states, 16 in New York, that are all about equivalent as far as the problem of drug addiction. And then in wave one, they take some counties and implement the intervention strategies that Eve identified. So you can kind of see how those counties are doing. And then they have wave two go in and implement a year or two later and see the difference, you know, between, okay, why is county one who was in wave one doing better than county two who wasn't in wave one? And then you add four other states into the NIH study, and I think we'll get a lot of good data. Now, it's going to be 3 years down the road. Too many people are going to have died of opioid deaths in the meantime. But I do think it's a decent study, at least getting the data and the information.
I think data is our biggest ally. Mm. We have to get the data. I absolutely agree.
It sets benchmarks. Mark, going back to a statement that Al had made, there's seems to be multiple task force. I pulled up some information under the health department, and we also have an opioid task force, which I think recently had its name changed. We've got Steve Kelly, who's nationally recognized for his program. Could we have someone pull together some of the information?
We could. I mean, but the task force that has turned into the HEAL study grant, Steve Kelly is part of that. All these other groups, Institute for Family Health, there's about 50 people that are part of this task force that was there before the HEAL grant, but all of the nonprofits, I mean, the reason Legislator Walter is in the study is not because of the work on the legislature, but her work with Institute for Family Health. So all of these different nonprofits that are in the opioid world do come to this task force.
Okay.
And then there's also the Ulster Prevention Council, which is also part of the task force and now part of the Healing Studies Grant. I would say at one point I would be in agreement that we were too segmented, too fractured. I think right now we have every basically group represented in both that study and that task force in a way that we are, you know, Samadhi comes, People Inc., who does, you know, the stabilization center across the way in Dutchess and does some opioid work here. People from Access Supports for Living, people from Family Services, Ulster County, I mean, the Sheriff's Department. There are a bunch of groups that are part of this task force already. That's why I think it would be helpful if either I have somebody from the HEAL study come and present.
Okay. Do you want me to reach out to Steve to see if he can come and speak with our committee, or is that it's up to the committee? You know, he can come and talk, and Victoria can come with him, or maybe she can come instead. But yeah, no, I think Steve would be a great one to reach out to talk a little bit about his program and how the Allenville Hospital is involved and what they've been doing over the years. So
especially with the information that Mark was sharing around these spikes in opioid overdoses, even if the mortality rate is different because of the proliferation of the naloxone. This is going to be something, God willing, the dust settles on COVID at some point. I suspect this is something that we'll be dealing with.
Sure. Okay. I can reach out to him. Now, is that something you would want for next month? I don't know how we're going to be meeting, whether it's going to be in person or it's going to be another Zoom meeting. Yeah, I guess we can play it by ear that way, and I could see what his schedule's like as well. If he has the availability, then I think it would be good to reach out for him to participate.
That'd be great.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, I will reach out to him then. Is there anything else? Anybody? All right. Well, hearing nothing, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Third.
Very good. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Good night, everyone.
All right, everybody.
Good, guys.
Take care.
Well, take care. All right, bye.